afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
So, today is August 2nd, 2026, and we are here with our friend Kathy Grindstaff, who is sitting in for herself and our friend Officer Joe, because he was otherwise engaged. He's on location.
We should have made him call
in. We just don't know what location. He's on some location. And we have our friend Robert Exter with us today, so it's kind of fun. We're not just sitting here talking to ourselves. Our guest is Senior Counsel for CIVL, that is the Cannabis Industry Victims Educating Litigators. His name is Dave Evans. David G. Evans, as a matter of fact. And he's an all-around smart guy on this topic. He has done a ton of research, got a long history of dealing with all this stuff. And I just, I guess, you know, we're into the DEA hearing and the rescheduling and all that good stuff. But, Dave, why is it, we've spoken with, the pharmacist, Phil Drum, and I think he's back on in a couple of weeks. We've talked to them about all this. So here you have a product that you can't really adequately quantify the strength of. And it's now going to be in the same category with drugs like Tylenol with codeine and things that you have to have a prescription for, tracked. So you couldn't get a script here and then go to Oregon and get another one and another one. It would all pop up in a database. How is this going to fit into that category?
But we're only talking medical marijuana. So
how does that fit in?
Here's the problem with the prescriptions.
Yeah.
Last April, when the Attorney General legalized it and said basically marijuana coming out of its state.
Oh, no. He was attacked by the cone of silence. Wait, the cone of silence got you. The Attorney General, Attorney General said what?
The Attorney General, back in April, said that he is moving medical marijuana that comes out of a medical marijuana dispensary on the state level, he's moving all that marijuana to Schedule 3. Okay, because he claimed that the states have this robust system for protecting patient safety, which they do not. Mm-mm. He also did that in violation of the administrative process. What he did was illegal, and we're taking him to court. This is what he also said. There are DEA rules, laws, governing the process of issuing prescriptions and also of labeling medical products, controlled substances. He told the states in this order that you no longer have to obey those rules. Okay? So when it comes to any other Schedule 3 drug, you have to obey the prescription rules. And you have to obey the labeling laws. But when it comes to marijuana as a drug, you don't have to obey those laws anymore. He put that in the order. Okay. So what does that mean? Well, under the prescription laws of the DEA, you have to put in, when you write a prescription, you have to put in the dosage, ingestion method, and other information about the drug. You don't have to do that anymore. You only have to put in the patient's name and the date, and that's it. So, and then when it comes to labeling, he said, there are about 15 things that have to be considered in labeling a medicine. For example, when you open up a package insert, when you've got a prescription drug, there's a whole list of things that you get information on. Well, he said you don't have to do that anymore when it comes to marijuana.
Is that really a thing? I mean, can we do that?
He did it.
Right?
He did it. Can he do it legally? No, he cannot do it legally. Okay? But there's a lot of things that Trump does that are later overturned by the courts. So this is just another one of his things that he's throwing out there in hopes that it'll pass. He can't do that. He can't change those laws without going through the administrative process. That's the law. He broke the law. So now you can pretty much do whatever you want when it comes to marijuana. You don't have to obey any of the federal rules. If the state says it's okay, it's okay. Now, he said, you know, if the state, rules about recommending the drug you can use. Now, the problem is that those state rules are different in every state. You don't have to write a prescription. You have to write a recommendation. You may or may not have to do a thorough evaluation of the patient. You may or may not have to do dosage, none of that kind of stuff. Every state's got different rules. And he said, I don't care about that. You can just go ahead and do it. You do whatever you want on the state level. And you don't have to do anything about labeling. So that means that if the product causes psychosis, as far as I know, no state requires that be put on the label. So you don't have to do it anymore. Now, what are the problems connected with this not having all that information? Well, the DEA, the FDA has a responsibility. Congress said they have to publish information about prescription drugs, and that information has to be available to doctors. That information does not exist for marijuana. It is not there, okay? The doctors no longer are going to have information available to them to make these decisions. So, for example, with drug testing, when a drug test comes back positive, it has to go to a doctor who is called a medical review officer, and the doctor has to verify that it is, in fact, a valid prescription. How's the doctor going to do that now? There's no information for the doctor about that. Normally, the doctor would go to the pharmacy to verify the prescription. Now the doctor has to go to a pot dispensary and talk to a bud tender. And get the, I mean, this is beyond criminal and reckless. And this is exactly what they're doing.
Keep left to stay on I-78 West.
You know where you are.
Keep
left. I think you better stay to the left, get on I-78 West.
Yeah, and I've read this over and over because I just could not believe it. I couldn't believe that they were being so reckless and criminal, but they're doing it. And you know, everybody who's looked at it agrees with me. Said, yeah, they're doing it. So it's now up to the Federal Court of Appeals in D.C. to decide this issue. Hopefully, they'll keep the case in and they'll decide it. But it's been a blatant violation of the law. And they don't seem to give a damn.
So with your personal opinion, because there's a lot of people in the drug prevention business or, you know, that we work so hard keeping our kids off drugs, a lot of them are just becoming resigned. Like, oh, it's just going to happen.
It's just going to happen.
It's just going to happen. There's nothing we can do about it. Are you seeing more of that? Because I'm not resigned. I will fight this to my death.
First of all, in some cases, they're forbidden to do anything about it. The White House talked to the drug czar's office, who has a responsibility to protect the public, and told them not to have any discussions about this. In states where the prevention dollars are controlled by the states, they're afraid to speak up. That's New Jersey, New York, for example. I have talked to people there. They said, we're not speaking up against it. We don't want to lose our grants. It's a real problem. Pueblo, Colorado, the school board there, forbade the schools from saying anything about marijuana that was bad. We have towns that have been taken over by the marijuana industry. So the word is good. But is it hopeless? No. When I was a kid, there were advertisements for doctors advertising cigarettes.
Yep.
Saying that they calm the throat, you could lose weight. 5 out of 10 doctors recommend Lucky's.
And they were in their lab coats. I mean, the ads have them.
In their lab coats. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I went to a military academy in Virginia when I was 13 years old. They sold cigarettes to us in the student canteen. That would be impossible today.
Well, we used to put them in the ration boxes for the military,
of course.
Their soldiers.
When I went through when I went through basic training, we all got cigarettes in our sea ration box.
And when I was in high school back in the late 80s, there was a smoking area for students.
Right. So what do you see today? What do you see today with tobacco? I personally don't know anybody that smokes cigarettes.
Yeah, you don't see it very much. But
not at all. You don't hear of everybody smoking.
But how many years it took us to get to that point? Are we going to survive the next 30 years?
How did we get to that point? We got to that point by education by the tobacco people, who were heroic. I mean, they spent decades. They endured all of the punishments that we're now enduring from the marijuana industry. They broke the tobacco companies. And finally, the government took them to court. And the tobacco smokers took them to court, and that's what changed the thing. So we have given up on the government to do anything about this. Right. The government is too corrupt when it comes to this. So now we're going towards litigation. That's why I formed Cannabis Industry Victims Educating Litigators. We help lawyers sue the marijuana industry. We were involved in filing of a class action lawsuit recently against four of the top marijuana companies. That covers 14 states, actually maybe 15 states. We went after Curaleaf, Verano, and two of the other big marijuana companies. We got other companies in our sites that we're going to go after. We have personal injury lawsuits going right now. The minute that somebody makes a big judgment, gets a big judgment from one of those lawsuits, you're going to see every lawyer and his or her mother filing lawsuits, just like what happened with tobacco.
Right.
And by the way, the company, the law firms that are doing these class action lawsuits, companies who did the class action lawsuits against tobacco, they see that there is legitimate reason to file these lawsuits now.
Right.
So I think that's what's going to happen. People that are the victims are going to come forward. There's going to be some big judgments that are going to be then, and then they're going to face a lot of economic problems. What the marijuana companies are doing right now are violations of the federal criminal law. They're engaging in wire and mail fraud in their advertising. That is a criminal offense under federal law. They can be sued under RICO, the racketeering criminal law, federal law, and our lawsuits have RICO claims. And that's how they got the tobacco companies. That was illegal to sell tobacco, but they were engaging in false advertising about their products. And engaging in wire and mail fraud, saying that their products were safe. That was fraud.
And
that's a criminal act.
The other part of it that, to go back to cigarettes, I mean, one of the big catalysts, I think, was that it became socially unacceptable and people became kind of demonized, which I don't know if I'm a big fan of that whole program, but, you know, the canceling, that was really the first big canceling. Oh, he's a smoker. And I remember when we were employers, it's like somebody came in for an interview and they were a smoker and it was like, oh, brother, breaks every 5 seconds. And then, you know, the stench of cigarette smoke taking up the office.
Right.
And of course, you didn't get to bring that up, but that was a consideration. I'd be lying if I said it wasn't, and I'm sure it happened a lot. But the other little piece of this is a lot of these people growing the dope are criminals.
Yeah.
It isn't even just the selling of it and the advertising and the da 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 da. It's the cartels and like up where we are. ACLU is defending them and advocating for their water rights and
they drop the case?
Not really, no, they got paid.
ACLU gets a lot of money from George Soros and other organizations to work towards legalizing all drugs.
Sure, because how do you unwind society, right? Let's unwind it with that. So let's take a really quick break and come back, but I do want to get into more of your legal work and kind of the trajectory that it's on. I'm real curious.
I want to hear something positive.
Oh, Kathy, we're saving that for the end.
I can tell you about some wins that we've had.
Oh, okay. Kathy, you can be happy.
So
hey, I got a song for Kathy
about,
coming right up. Here, Kathy, this one's for you.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got a year. Wow! I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice.
Take a deep breath. Okay.
So,
what do you think,
I can
Dave?
Drive up until it gets dark. So, you'd have to do all the driving all night. Yeah, okay.
I love driving at night. I'm so sad I'm so far away. I would drive. Love driving.
Well, we're in Pennsylvania right now. And we have to drive down to North Carolina. I live in Asheville now. So, we're just having a debate on whether to do that or not.
Well... Ask that lady who keeps talking in the background, telling you where to go. What does she think?
Well, that's my daughter. So
no, the automated directions lady.
Right. My daughter's driving right now, so I'm putting her in control of setting our agenda for the rest of the evening.
Wow, atta guy. Let her go.
Yeah, well, she's pretty smart.
That's good. I remember my dad let me drive. I love driving. Shout out to the daughter.
Right.
Hold the wheel. So what do you think about the future, like on the litigation? Is the litigation kicking in? I mean, initially it was like, I think it was kind of novel. Now it's not quite so novel anymore?
It's still novel. What you need to understand is litigation takes a long time.
Sure.
Lawsuits that get filed, there may be nothing for a year or 2 years or even 3 years. So we're at the phase right now where there's been litigation filed but has not been resolved yet.
Okay.
We have a law firm in California that is specializing now in representing children who have become psychotic because of that. Now, I spoke at a mass tort lawyers conference in Nashville a few months ago. The attorneys that were with me told all the attorneys, they said, within a year or two, you're all going to be marijuana lawyers. The legal profession has now formally recognized this. The American, Association for Justice, which used to be called the Trial Lawyers Association, has now formed a cannabis injury litigation group. Okay, so they have now recognized for all the personal injury lawyers, the trial lawyers, that this is something they need to pay attention to. So that is very hopeful. I've worked for years to get that to take place. And tobacco lawyers are now hot on the trail right now. The marijuana industry are selfish, brutal and ruthless to attack them, and that's the trial lawyers. They're not afraid of anybody, okay? They'll go after anybody if they think that there's a good case and they can make money. Yeah. And these mass tort lawyers are used to taking on big corporations. They're not afraid of them. They're not afraid of the government. They're not afraid of anybody. They have a lot of courage. We're at that phase right now where everybody has just gotten awake. They're seeing the opportunities out there, and they're starting to work on it. Now, we've had some wins. We had a case in New Jersey regarding these hemp products that are just as dangerous as regular marijuana products. We had a professional athlete who I represented, who had gotten into the hemp products, became psychotic, was being brought home to go into treatment, decided that the FBI was following them. He jumped out of the car, jumped off a bridge. He is now no longer able to be a professional athlete because of his injuries. So he still suffers from the psychosis to some degree, still thinks that the FBI is after him. But he's healthy enough that he's gotten a job now as a coach, and he's doing very well. But he lost out on being a professional athlete. So we brought the matter to court. The defendants filed a motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim. The judge was very hesitant. When we argued the motion, he said, you know, normally you let the proponent of the motion speak first, but he didn't do that. He talked to me first. And he said, Mr. Evans, he said, has anybody else ever litigated this type of case? Have there been any judicial decisions? And I said, no, Your Honor, this is the first. And what he was basically asking me is, why should I stick my neck out for these guys? Nobody else has done it. So I wasn't sure what he was going to do. Well, he came back with an opinion backing us up 100%. Okay, I could not have written a better opinion myself. Okay, and he said, yes, they had a duty to warn people about this. They didn't do it. This is product liability, and the case is going to go forward. They filed more motions to dismiss, which he did not uphold. I've now turned this over to another lawyer because I'm trying not to be personally involved in litigation anymore. I'm 78. I don't have the energy anymore to do this. So that was a clear win. It got a lot of publicity. The insurance industry wrote a whole article about it, and that was a win. Then we had a family in New Jersey where the town council conspired with a marijuana grow operation to put a marijuana grow operation right next to their house, okay? 15 greenhouses, okay?
Wow.
And as you're well aware, marijuana growing stinks to high heaven.
Oh, man.
It smells really bad.
Yeah.
So we sued them under RICO, and they hadn't done anything yet. They had just applied for a license, so the judge... on the RICO thing, but the minute they start doing something, the RICO is going to apply. So the grower moved on, and the town agreed to not put in any marijuana places anywhere near them anymore, respect their privacy. That was a clear win under a RICO decision. It's a very well-written opinion. So basically the grower read the opinion, said the minute we start putting up a greenhouse, boom, we got a RICO case. Now, the advantage of RICO cases are that you get triple damages. If you've been damaged in your property, let's say the value of your house went down $100,000, you can get $300,000 damages and your attorney's fees paid, okay? So RICO is a very effective tool that we can use. And every single marijuana dispensary in this country is engaging in marijuana racketeering under RICO and can be sued under RICO if you're damaged in your property. Now, you can't sue because of a personal injury, like, you know, the fact that you became sick from marijuana, but if you lost your job or you lost property value, you can sue. Another case hit the United States Supreme Court that I was involved in. This is another big victory where a truck driver used CBD and was told there was no THC in it. He tested positive for THC he sued under RICO. Initially the federal court said, nah, you know, this is a personal injury case. It's fraud. You can't just sue because you lost your job due to a personal injury. The U.S. Supreme Court said, no. If a personal injury causes you financial damage, you can sue under RICO. So because he was damaged by the personal injury of fraud and lost his job, you can sue under RICO. That is now the law in the entire country. So that's another big win. So that anybody damaged, you lose your job because of marijuana, you can sue under RICO. And we have a case in New Jersey that we're going to go forward where a guy lost his job because of psychosis caused by marijuana, and he can file a RICO claim. So there's a lot available to lawyers. There's a lot available to people who have marijuana grow operations that are affecting the value of their property. What we did with these people in New Jersey is we got an expert opinion from a realtor saying, yeah, there's no doubt that in this place with an 8-foot-tall barbed wire fence around it with 15 marijuana grow operations is gonna tank their property value. Their property's not going to be worth crap. And, you know, they're going to lose value in their property, and you can sue. And there's been another RICO case where loss in property value in Colorado was upheld as the reason to go forward with the RICO. But we're still in the beginning stages of all this. You know, we're right. Witness where we were with tobacco maybe in the late 1960s or the 70s, right. Where these lawsuits were just coming up. People were getting used to them. The value of the lawsuits is they have a tremendous educational impact on people. People find out about it. For example, look at the transitioning surgeries where kids are being transitioned by surgery.
Right.
There was a case recently in New York where the surgeons were successfully sued for this. And all the other doctors read this and say, okay, I can't be doing this anymore, because I can get sued. So that's what's going to ultimately happen. Where the insurance companies, we've sent letters to all of the big insurance companies about this, telling them not to give these people insurance. We're trying to deny them banking. We're going to the financiers of marijuana industry telling them, look, this is the risk that you're running with this. Going on Wall Street, Trulieve just got on Wall Street, I think, you know, and
yeah.
I can tell you that I have no doubt that Trulieve is going to get sued. I have no doubt about that. And I can't discuss that any further, but I will tell you they're going to get sued big time. So it's gonna have an impact, and you know, we have to look at what happened with tobacco. I mean,
yep.
People don't smoke cigarettes anymore. Everybody got the word because of these lawsuits. And the marijuana industry is following their playbook. And the same thing that happened to tobacco is going to happen to marijuana, except it's going to be worse because we're going to have a lot of teenage kids with psychosis.
Right.
And those are going to be very, very attractive to juries when they find out about the really terrible things that the marijuana industry's been doing.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering too, like on the, you know, let's say there's lawsuits that go through on these guys. When you hit the big players like that, does that catapult us toward a tipping point, or is that just seen as, hey, all the little guys can get away with it, the big guys are always out front taking the shots? I mean,
I think what's going to happen, first of all, there are a lot of little guys selling tobacco, and still are.
Yeah.
But tobacco sales have gone down. The cost of tobacco has skyrocketed because of all the taxes that are put on it. You know, it's going to have an impact all over the place. If anybody is insured that has insurance, they're a target. They can be sued. Even a mom and pop grocery store could be sued. You know, it's gonna have that kind of ultimately an impact. What we're after really is stopping people from using the drug.
Right.
Once they see how really dangerous it is. And the biggest problem we have is that people don't see it as being dangerous because their personal experience with marijuana back in college wasn't that bad. I can't say that marijuana ever harmed me tremendously. I smoked it several times. I got high. And most people that are now in the positions of power, people my age or 10 or 20 years younger, did not experience the high potency marijuana that is out there now. And so they have a different opinion about it. When you talk to people about medical marijuana, they all think that it's medical.
Right.
They agree with that, but then when you show them the facts, they say, well, I didn't know that.
And there's no difference. That's what I try to tell the kids.
Yeah.
Explain to me the difference between medical and recreational.
And I'm sorry, but when was the last time your doctor told you to go smoke something?
Yeah.
Like never.
Right.
I cannot lie.
No,
I did not exhale.
No, there is no medicine to smoke.
Yeah.
And the reason you can't smoke something is you can't titrate the dose.
Right.
Everybody has
a
different lung capacity.
Right. Yes.
And if you're going to smoke it and you want to have a 24-hour effect, you're going to have to stay up all night smoking. And you can't do that.
It's just, it's one of those things where we're at a point where we either, you know, fly off the cliff with Thelma and Louise or start pumping the brakes on this, because it has just gotten into everything.
Yeah.
And the effect on the youth is unbelievable. The blind eye from the adults and the complicit access from adults is mind blowing.
And even though, you know, the government in their I don't want to even say their smartness, but leaving so much of this up to individual communities and states, we don't have the capacity to even enforce anything that we adopt. So
right.
I mean, it's like, what do you do?
Well, you keep working on it is what you do. You don't give up. I mean, I look at it this way. I stopped smoking back in 1978 because I came to believe what the anti-tobacco people were saying. Okay? They probably saved my life. Because I started smoking when I was 10. Started smoking on a regular basis when I was 13. Okay? And when I stopped smoking, I was smoking and inhaling cigars. Had I kept doing that, I'd probably be dead by now. So I owe those people a debt. They worked on this for decades, fearlessly, and endured unbelievable abuse. And I owe them for that. I owe people who endured abuse to get seatbelts, got rid of lead in paint, got rid of lead in gasoline. For all those pioneers and heroes for public health, people that fought against bacteria for, you know, wanting to have doctors wash their hands. Louis Pasteur, all those people, we owe them a debt. Now it's our turn. Now it's our turn to step up to bat and do what needs to be done. Okay?
Yeah.
It's a duty we all have. I have chosen this duty because my life has been directed towards this. Everything that I've done in my life is focusing down to this moment to prepare me for what I'm doing now. And, you know, I'm just stuck with it. But people should not give up. They should continue advocating with their public officials, speaking out against it, just like the other people did in the past. They never gave up. You know, they knew they were right. They knew that ultimately if they kept fighting, it would turn around, and it did. It did turn around.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy that fought against leaded gasoline, you should hear what they did to him. Good Lord. I mean, he was in Antarctica, and they scheduled a hearing in Congress purposely because they knew he was away in Antarctica. The son of a bitch flew up from Antarctica to go to the hearing, okay? Mm-hmm. That's what it takes. That's what it takes.
And Dave gets spicy. We have to take a quick break here. We're going to come right back with our friend Dave Evans. Amazing info. You can find it all at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Somebody gotta shake things up, somebody gotta shut things down. Somebody gotta strike the match, break the ice about the first round. Somebody gotta go all night, somebody gotta dig down deep. Mean what they say, say what they mean, the way I see, you might as well be me. Might as well be me. Might as well be me.
Thanks, Dave, for volunteering to have it be you, because somebody does have to fix this crap. Hey, one thing we were talking about here in the studio during the break, there is a common misperception that marijuana has to be rescheduled so that they can study it.
That's what we did, too.
Hey, come on, I said that with a straight face.
That is a complete and utter lie.
Yes, how big a lie is it?
It's a huge lie. The National Academies of Sciences in 2017 did a very comprehensive report on marijuana. They studied 10,000 studies. In 2017, there were 10,000 studies about marijuana. Since then, there have been hundreds, if not thousands, more studies. The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists studied this last year. They came out, and they're a politically liberal organization. They come out and said there is no reason why any pregnant woman should use marijuana. No reason. No medical reason, no other reason. Do not use it. Okay? The Heart Association came out saying, I think that was last year also, that use of marijuana increases your risk of cardiac injury by 25%.
Oh, wow.
Now, think about this.
That's a lot.
Think about this. If there was anything that raised your chance of having a heart attack by 25%, I think most people would stop doing it, or it would get more publicity.
Unless Dr. Fauci told you it was good.
There's been mega studies done on pain, saying it's not a good pain reliever. There are studies all over the place about psychosis. The American Psychiatric Association says don't use it. There's no mental health treatment that it should involve marijuana. It only makes mental health worse. The Veterans Administration says do not use it for post-traumatic stress syndrome. That's another thing they say that it's helpful for. They say no, it can cause veterans to become violent. It can make post-traumatic stress syndrome worse. We've studied it. The state of California, Pot Central, their environmental department looked at a whole bunch of studies and said that marijuana smoke is a carcinogen under Proposition 65. That's California says that, okay? There have been lots of studies. It is not that hard to get marijuana to study, and we encourage it. But I don't know where these 10,000 studies came from that are so hard to get. I don't know where the obstetricians came up with their studies. The heart people came up with their studies. These are all recent studies that have been done on marijuana. And the conclusive opinion is it's not a good medicine.
None of those studies, I mean, with numbers that are that high of the research, it isn't like 80% of the studies said that it's not medically advised. 100% of the studies were unable to prove medical benefit.
Good studies, yeah. Now, there's studies that have come out that are not very good studies. They're done on small populations.
Right.
They do not use double-blind, research. Where you use a placebo and then the actual product, they're slack science, they're junk science. Same thing was done with tobacco. The tobacco people created the Tobacco Institute to do research on tobacco, and they said, no, hey, tobacco's fine. It ain't gonna harm you. It's not addictive. I mean, I saw the heads of the tobacco companies testify before Congress. Each one of them, one right after the other, said that nicotine is not addictive.
Oops.
I mean, they said that in public. Yeah. I mean, it's ludicrous. Ludicrous. And so, yeah, there's studies saying that it's medicine, but you got to sit down and, you know, look at the details. Was this done on 25 people, 10 people? Were they marijuana users before? What level of marijuana did they use and so forth? When you look at the mega studies that have been, you know, looked at a whole bunch of studies, and come up with a conclusion, those are the ones that you should trust. You know, the FDA does not use sloppy studies. When you do a clinical study under the FDA rules, and there's a federal law that says what those studies have to be, comprised of, marijuana has not met the test. It's not there.
And if their studies, see, the funny part is, right, on the one hand, we have to reschedule it to Schedule 3 so we can study it, but they've got studies that supposedly are good that they tout, but they don't admit that they have any studies when they want to reschedule it because basically all the studies show
that it's bad. Like,
right. So you're saying we need to study it, but yet it should go to a Schedule 3 when we haven't done any studies on it?
Right.
It's completely illogical.
Yeah, yeah. Both those things cannot be true simultaneously.
Right. Exactly. Exactly right.
Huh.
But people should not give up. I mean, they want you to give up. They want you to think it's inevitable. And it's not.
Yeah. No.
It's not. I mean, the marijuana industry now is a big aircraft carrier, and we are all little tugboats. And we get enough tugboats, we're going to turn that aircraft carrier around.
I like it. I am curious to know if you do, is most of your legal work on this based on harm? What about the things like the grows up by us that are harming actual neighborhoods and all those things? And, you know, and you have the ACLU claiming that these people are just farmers and they need water and, you know, all that nonsense. Do you get involved in those?
Those would be RICO claims. And, you know, again, this is a resource issue. The ACLU gets paid by Soros to do this.
Right.
They have funding to do this. Our funding right now, and by the way, none of our funding comes from pharmaceutical companies. It all comes from families that are wealthy, that are concerned about this issue or have addicted children. There's not a dime coming into our litigation from any corporation. Got a financial interest in it. But right now we're focusing on primarily the anti-government stuff. We're going to leave it up to the private, personal injury lawyers to do the personal injury cases. And they'll probably take them on a contingent basis, which means that, the client doesn't pay, anything unless the lawyer wins. And my understanding is that's the cases that are going on right now. For example, that one with the professional athlete is a contingent. We were able to show that he has lost $800,000 in money that he could have earned as a professional athlete. And that's enough money to make these lawyers, you know, interested in it because they'll get a third of that. And that's a minimum, $800,000, a minimum.
Nice. On the federal level, what's the next? So now they've had all this. You guys, I mean,
the hearings, all this.
The hearing has all happened. You just are we waiting for the decision, and then
on the Medicare lawsuit, we filed the lawsuit in Medicare case. We're waiting for the court to assign a briefing schedule where we submit briefs. On the Attorney General's order in April, where he legalized the medical marijuana. The same situation. We're waiting for a briefing schedule. With the hearings, the hearings are done, and we have to submit briefs to the court by August 17th. So we'll all be submitting 50-page briefs. The judge then will render a decision, which will then be sent. He can't throw it out. His only role is, as a judge, is to do fact-finding and make recommendations to the DEA. We went into this assuming that we were going to lose and that we would have to go to the Federal Court of Appeals. So everything we have done is to prepare the record for that appeal. Now, we may get lucky, and this judge, He seems like he's an honorable man to me. He did a very nice job at the trial. He was very fair, even-handed. He appeared to be ethical. But we don't know what he's going to do. But even if he comes in 100% on our side, the head of the DEA, whose boss is the Attorney General, whose boss is President Trump, you know, can overrule it. And then that becomes the final agency decision, and then we go back to the Federal Court of Appeals. We are prepared for that. We are funded for that. We have been preparing for an uphill fight to get us into the Court of Appeals. They are very good at denying presidential overreach, which this is a clear case of that. If they are halfway fair to us, we should win. Our evidence is overwhelming. But, you know, judges on the lower level are, with a Medicare lawsuit, the judge originally turned that out, saying we didn't have standing, but he was appointed by Trump. And he violated the law in rendering this decision. He was supposed to give us favorable inferences at this stage of the litigation, and he didn't do it. So we have now filed an appeal against him. If you read his opinion, he went out of the way to rule against us. So we're going to go to the Court of Appeals and say, look, he was supposed to do this. At this stage of litigation, he didn't do it. He violated the law, come in our favor and send it back down for trial. So that's where we're at with all of that. On the state level, we've had some judges that are reluctant to rule against the marijuana industry. And because the states are getting so much income from it,
right.
A lot of these judges are political appointees. We ran into a judge in Highland Park. I talked about that earlier, where the judge, we had a lawsuit going there. The judge would not allow us to conduct any discovery. I could not issue subpoenas. I could not do depositions. The fact that the DWIs went up 56% in the town, he would not allow me to get a look at those DWI reports. And I said, well, Your Honor, you know, the marijuana stores come in, DUI is up 56%. We want to see if cannabis was involved. And he said, well, do you have any proof that cannabis was involved? And we said, no, Your Honor, because we haven't been able to look at the reports yet.
We can't get there
he
from
said,
here.
Well, you got to have some showing that cannabis was involved. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that he was doing.
Wow.
And we withdrew the lawsuit. He was corrupt. He was corrupt.
Obviously.
I was not allowed to do anything that a lawyer normally can do. I couldn't conduct depositions. I couldn't get written discovery, nothing. He just completely slammed down the case. I told the client, look, we have all this stuff coming up in the federal level. I cannot screw around with this judge. We had to back out of the case. We've had that situation in some other states where they rule against us on some of these procedural things, and they give absolutely bullshit reasons for doing it. So we've appealed some of them now. Matter of fact, we've appealed everything except that New Jersey case. So this was not uncommon with these types of cases where states are getting revenue. Judges are political appointees in those states. They don't want to upset the politicians. And so they find a way of ducking out of it. The most convenient way is to say that you didn't have standing. You didn't have a right to file a lawsuit. Because those decisions are very subjective. One judge says, well, you know, you've been damaged $1. I think you have standing. Another judge will say, well, the only were damaged $100,000. I don't think you have standing. So that's what we're going through. The tobacco lawsuits went through the same types of problems. In North Carolina, it was considered patriotic to smoke cigarettes.
It's not just because you said a bad word either. We really legitimately hit the time. Although, okay. I've never seen Alex move that fast.
What, Alex. What bad word?
Well, the one I can't say right now.
Okay.
It was kind of funny.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
No. Oh, we liked it. It was funny. We liked watching Alex panic in there.
Right.
Thank you so much. We look forward to touching base with you again.
I give power and thanks to your little steamboat. You're doing a terrific job, and you're a very powerful steamboat doing good work, and keep it up.
Thank you.
Three cheers
for
the tugboats.
Woohoo!
All right. We're out.
That justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line. When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon. We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.